I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. This evening, we'll look at what's ahead for Kathleen Kane and Chris Christie. First, classes at Ursinus College in Montgomery County are set to resume Monday following a shutdown when nearly 200 students fell ill to a mysterious illness. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, health officials are scrambling for answers.
Recently, senior Brian Fern traveled to King of Prussia, a half-hour drive from campus. He bought a banana smoothie and headed back. But then it hit him.
On the ride home on 422, I had to pull over to throw up a couple times.
Since Tuesday, college officials say 192 students have gotten sick. More than two dozen were treated at hospitals, says Assistant Dean of Students Missy Bryant.
The symptoms have included severe vomiting, severe stomach pain, some diarrhea. And so we're just continuing to work with the health department to determine what the cause might be.
Health officials say early indicators point to a stomach bug that raced across the close-knit campus of some 1,600. Sanitation stands have been set up across campus. Investigators are examining the cafeteria and other common areas. And local pharmacies have sold out of surgical masks. Most students, including Fern, have been springing back after 12 to 24 hours.
You know, I would say 12 hours, I felt like I was pretty much back to normal after I just laid in bed for a while.
The Centers for Disease Control has been helping coordinate the response, Brian says.
All of our efforts are focused on sanitizing and cleaning our common areas on campus, the academic buildings, classrooms, highly trafficked common areas in residence halls, as well as common room bathrooms.
A final determination on the culprit behind the outbreak is expected in about a week. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Kathleen Kane and Chris Christie, two elected officials in the headlines this week who share more than alliterative names. Both have outsized personalities that have served to both propel and limit their political aspirations. Let's hone in with WHYY reporters. First, Katie Colinari, and then Phil Gregory. Katie, a little bit of review. Of course, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court temporarily suspended Kane's law license back in October after she was ordered to stand trial on conspiracy, perjury, and other charges. The state house has voted to launch a formal process to impeach her, though she did dodge a bullet, so to speak, in the Senate this week.
She did. A vote on whether or not to remove Kane in the Senate failed because Republican leaders failed to get the two-thirds vote that they needed.
Though ultimately, if the impeachment proceedings play out, it will go again back to the Senate to vote.
That's right. So here's how the impeachment thing is going to work. What the House did the same day that the Senate took this vote on this resolution on whether or not to remove Kane, the House essentially gave the green light to a subcommittee that's going to do research into whether there is cause for Kane to be impeached. And so that subcommittee is going to come back with its research, we think, sometime this spring. And then the House will have to draft up what we know is called the Articles of Impeachment, if there is found cause that she should be impeached. And then the House will vote on it, and then that vote will go back to the Senate.
Meanwhile, she still harbors hopes that she'll run for re-election in the upcoming primary.
That's exactly right. And she's got three challengers, including Montgomery County Commissioner Chairman Josh Shapiro, who is running against her. And next week is a big deadline for that race. It's the date on which all the candidates have to submit their nomination petition. So that's the signatures that you need across the state from voters in your party that say, yes, I'm supporting you. So all of this stuff with Kane, we'll see next week whether or not any of this has had an impact on voters.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY's Katie Colinari on NewsWorks Tonight. And now on to Chris Christie. And for that, let's hear from WHYY's Phil Gregory. Phil, it's a matter of Governor Christie reintroducing himself to Garden State residents. He spent more days in New Hampshire than any other candidate.
Yeah, and he was there for quite a significant amount of time. And now he's back here at the State House today. No public appearance yet. No comment outside his inner circle, where he's still working on the budget address that he'll deliver to the legislature next week.
The big ticket items in New Jersey include the pension fund, the transportation trust fund. Have you heard at all from, say, Senate President Steve Sweeney on how he proposes to engage Christie on those issues?
Well, we've heard from both Senate President Sweeney and from Assembly Speaker Vinnie Prieto that they are going to make efforts to work with the governor to get things done to solve these big issues in the state now that his focus has returned on New Jersey. The big question is how much conciliation there's going to be between these two sides. I've talked with some political analysts this week who say it's unclear whether Christie is going to be angry, bitter, demonstrative after his losses in New Hampshire and Iowa. and whether that's going to make him have some strong partisan differences to burnish his conservative credentials. Maybe he'll try not to agree so much with the Democrats who control the legislature, or whether he'll cooperate with them in efforts to get things done to show that he is a great compromiser as he might look forward to a 2020 presidential race.
On the face of the issues, though, how much conciliation is required? Is there a big gulf between Democrats and Republicans on these issues?
In some cases, we just don't know. When it comes to the Transportation Trust Fund, everybody agrees that something has to be done to replenish this fund that pays for road and bridge repairs, because it's just going to go broke by summertime. And the question, though, is what do they do to fund this thing? We've heard talk that many of the Democrats are favorable to the idea of raising the gas tax, and whether Christie will go along with that idea, we just don't know.
Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome, Dave.
WHYY's Phil Gregory on Newsworks Tonight. Turning to this evening's headlines, a federal judge has hastily ordered the emergency sentencing of the ailing widow of a man who killed his former daughter-in-law at a Delaware courthouse. According to online court records, the judge was to sentence Lenore Matusiewicz at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. Attorneys said in the records that sentencing Matusiewicz at the hospital was necessary to ensure that she receives essential medical care. David, his mother, and his sister Amy Gonzalez were convicted of cyber stalking, resulting in the death of David's ex-wife, Christine Belford, in 2013. Prosecutors are seeking life sentences for David Matusiewicz and Gonzalez. Nine-time NBA All-Star Allen Iverson is among the finalists for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Iverson, of course, played with the Philadelphia 76ers from 1996 to 2006. In his 14 seasons with the NBA, Iverson was a three-time All-NBA first-team selection. He led the league in scoring average four times, steals three times, and minutes seven seasons. Iverson was named NBA Rookie of the Year in 1997 and NBA MVP in 2001. The class of 2016 will be announced April 4th before the NCAA Men's Championship game in Houston. 25 degrees on the way to 17 overnight. It's 6:11. We're considering a chance of scattered snow showers, otherwise cloudy skies overnight. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 21 but windy. Gusts up to 45 miles an hour, and then dropping all the way back to 3 overnight Saturday night. Sunday, sunny, breezy, high 17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's pause now for some music. Here's the late guitarist Michael Hedges with Aerial Boundaries. Thank you. Michael Hedges with the title track to his album, Aerial Boundaries. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on Pledge Free YStream.
Bryn Mawr Rehab supports WHYY and for more than 40 years has been committed to delivering advanced physical rehab services to those recovering from serious illness or injury. Their team of specialists develops customized inpatient and outpatient treatment plans for a range of conditions, including brain injury, spinal cord injury, concussion, and stroke. Patients travel from across the country for Bryn Mawr Rehab Hospital's creativity and personalized therapeutic approach. Learn more, including real patient stories, at mainlinehealth.org/rehab. Interstate Batteries supports WHYY, featuring battery recycling of automotive batteries. More information available at interstatebatteries.com.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. President Barack Obama rolled out a proposal this week devoting additional billions of dollars to bolster U.S. cybersecurity. Money well spent? Well, let's gauge public opinion with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Is cybersecurity anywhere near the top of the list of concerns for Americans?
Indeed it is. Every February we update a list of threats to the United States and ask Americans if it's a critical threat or not. And we included cyber terrorism among a bunch of other things this year. And it comes out third on the list. At the top of the list is international terrorism. Right below that, development of nuclear weapons by Iran. And right below that is cyber terrorism, the use of computers to cause disruption or fear in society. So clearly that is something that Americans are worried about. We didn't ask per se if they approved of the government spending billions, but their worry about it, to me, makes us feel confident that Americans would say money well spent.
Put these international concerns in context of domestic ones, principally the economy.
Domestically speaking, when we ask Americans what's the top problem, which we just did, it is the economy in general, dysfunctional government, immigration, terrorism. Those are the things that are at the top of the list. I should say the things that most of the presidential candidates are actually talking about.
Chris Christie, returning from the presidential campaign trail, devoting now his time principally to New Jersey. What do New Jersey voters think about the state of their economy?
It's pretty terrible. We just ask residents of every state in the union to rate their own state's economy. New Jersey was the fifth worst in the nation. Illinois residents are dead last, then West Virginia, then Connecticut, then Rhode Island, and then there's New Jersey. Now, on our state economic index score, New Jersey comes in at a +5. Illinois is the worst at a -22. You can contrast that, by the way, with Utah. That's the place to go. Utah's residents give their state's economy a +75 on our economic confidence index. So look at the difference there. Illinois -22, Utah +75.
How about Pennsylvania and Delaware?
Actually, they don't do that well either. New Jersey is fifth from the bottom, but Pennsylvania is actually 13th from the bottom in terms of Pennsylvania residents rating their economy. +22 is the economic confidence rating that Pennsylvania residents give their economy. Delaware is about in the middle of all the states. Delaware residents give their state's economy a +36. So none of the three states locally have residents who are all that ebullient on a relative basis about their economy, but that's particularly true for New Jersey residents.
Frank, let's hop back on that presidential campaign trail headed next to Nevada and South Carolina. The aforementioned Christie made a big deal about his experience as a governor relative to a senator or congressman or certainly Donald Trump. Let's assess who's left in the race.
Well, we just ask Americans that. How good is the following as training for one being a president, governor, being a member of Congress, senator, or a member of the House? Being the Secretary of State, wonder why we asked that question, being a member of the cabinet or being a business executive. And sure enough, being a governor edges out any of the others in terms of Americans say that's excellent or good training for being president. Not a lot, though. 72% of Americans say being a governor is excellent or good in terms of experience to be a president. But being a member of Congress, it comes in at 65%, which is just below that. So it's not the tremendous edge that I think Governor Christie was trying to make it when he was trying to get the nomination up there in New Hampshire. Business executive, dead last. Only 51% of Americans say that is excellent or good training. And, of course, that's what Donald Trump has on his resume. Americans don't think that's nearly as good a background for being president as being governor or being a member of Congress.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia has 48 zip codes, and every zip code tells a story. This year, WHYY is collaborating with AIR, the Association of Independence and Radio, on Every Zip Philadelphia to find out what the stories are where you live, work, and play. We're gathering conversations between neighbors, recollections of past places, and reports on changing communities from all 48 zip codes. This evening, we'll listen to two neighbors in Chinatown. Albert Lee is a community organizer born in Chinatown. He's lived there pretty much his entire life. Father Thomas Betts is a friar with St. John's the Evangelist Church. He's been a youth group leader in Chinatown for 25 years. The two met when Lee was in grade school, and Father Betts became his friend and mentor.
When you first arrived in Chinatown, was Chinatown, like, different? Like,
it was amazing. I remember the first Chinese New Year's I was there, watching the kids do their Chinese dances, the lion dance and some of the cultural dances that that they do, the umbrella dance. And I was just fascinated by it all. And again, now it seems rather normal, rather usual after so many years. But at the time, it was like I felt like I was stepping into another country. It was really, really wonderful for me.
Yeah, I would think that to meet those kids and then year in, year out, you're still there. You're still there so people can catch up with you and tell you what they've been doing or sort of like just kind of looking to you as a solid advice.
Yeah, and sometimes it's been things like, you know, I've been able to be there when kids that I knew growing up are now parents themselves.
Right.
And that's been exciting, or being at their weddings or hearing about their jobs. But then there are also the sad times too. I mean, people have had deaths and disasters in their families and in their lives. And I mean, although that's not fun to be part of that, it's an honor to be welcomed into those times in people's lives too.
Do you think it's a bit ironic, though, that in order for Chinatown to survive, it needed outsiders to sort of build it? Because, like, when people talk about, like, the history of Chinatown, they'll talk about you, you know, and it's like your help. And, again, you know, you're not Chinese.
We're part of that community. So that's been a tremendous privilege to be allowed to be part of that community. But the other side of it, too, is Chinatown also needs to be open to the rest of Philadelphia. It needs to be integrated in part of Philadelphia. So we need other ethnic communities, other ethnic members to come in and shop and eat and enjoy Chinatown. We want to keep a Chinese character to the community, but it doesn't mean that we don't need and want people who aren't Chinese to be part of the community in some way or other.
There's a whole talk about how in other Chinatowns it's sort of dying out.
Around the country, Chinatowns are failing for two reasons. One is the gentrification, and the other reason is Chinatowns are aging. A lot of times the young people move away, the old people stay. Some of those pressures are there for us too.
Yeah.
Chinatown's surrounded by new condos, and it's become popular. But what Chinatown, our Chinatown, has is it has institutions and it has businesses that still attract young people. So young people still come to go to the tea shops, or if they're a little older, to the bars. So our Chinatown, unlike most of the others in the country, still has a youthful look to it. Even if the residents of Chinatown aren't all young, although there are young families still in Chinatown too. So I think our Chinatown has its best years still ahead. But when did you decide that you were committed to Chinatown as opposed to wanting to escape Chinatown? I suspect when you were 14, you couldn't wait to get out of Chinatown.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to get out of Chinatown.
And then when you got to be 24, you probably realized, hey, Chinatown's a pretty good place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
there are good people there.
Yeah, I lived in South Philly, and it was so quiet. There was, of course, Chinese restaurant takeout. Just the number one Chinese restaurant, which I was like, hey, number one. But that was it. And there was, like, quiet streets. So I was like, I kind of like the fact that at 2 in the morning, you could find something to eat. Because people always said, well, if you live in Chinatown, you know, you could always get something to eat at 2 in the morning. I'm like, yeah, I'm up. But I don't like if someone else doesn't think highly of our neighborhood because it's my neighborhood. And if I had an opportunity to present Chinatown to other people and show them that it's not that bad, that you just had to look a little closer.
And you did that.
Yeah.
I think people who know you now are proud of you. I mean, you're one of the names both in Chinatown and Holy Redeemer that people kind of mention with a little bit of pride.
Yeah.
you know, people tell me they follow you on your blog or what is it?
Instagram.
Instagram. I'm still a technological idiot in some ways. But people who aren't Chinese are following you.
Yeah.
And I don't have an Instagram. Nobody knows about me that way. But you have a name in the city that's and it all came from – it's part of how you grew up and where you came from and how you – and I know you love Chinatown. I mean, it wasn't always easy growing up in Chinatown, but you still love Chinatown.
Yeah, I think the reason why I love Chinatown is because, I'll be honest, my parents live there and they still live there and they raised me there. So it's sort of like a very important, you know, part of me. So it's sort of like if I live in another neighborhood – I still grew up in Chinatown, so it's sort of like it is, like it or not, part of my whole upbringing. And yes, if I ever get married, you're we'll definitely have a Catholic wedding. You know? You'll officiate it. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Every Zip Philadelphia is a collaborative between WHYY and Finding America, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, with financial support from the Wincote Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader and our intern, Jared Whalen. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Al Banks and Diana Martinez. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.